This meeting of Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record please reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. on Monday, February 15th, 2021, and that we have a quorum today. Present are Senator Stevens, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Rivak. Staffing today's committee is Betty Tangerman, our LIO moderator is Alex Banizak, and we have Christopher Dickrell online from Records. Thank you to all of you. Please silence your cell phones. Today we have one item on the agenda, a bill, SB 22, an act repealing the termination date for the intensive management hunting license surcharge. This bill was heard by some of the committee members last session as it made its way through the committees and onto the House past the Senate floor. COVID interrupted its progress thereafter. Today we plan to hear and move this bill, and I'd like to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill forward. I'd like to introduce my wonderful staff, Ms. Emma Torkelson, who will be presenting our bill today. We've also invited testimony online as Doug Vincent Lang, Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game, as well as Mr. Eddie Grasser, the Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation, who will be providing testimony and answering any questions that arise. Ms. Torkelson, if you could please place yourself on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Chair Rivak and members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rivak. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present SB 22 today, an act repealing the termination date of the intensive management hunting license surcharge. Hunting is an essential part of many Alaskans' lives, but in order to maintain sustainable wildlife populations for future generations, careful management of these populations is necessary. Which is where intensive management comes in. The moment a caribou, moose, or deer population becomes at risk of falling below a sustainable level, the intensive management program identifies the root cause of the population decrease and then develops and implements a plan to rectify the issue. Most often, these plans are focused on research and management, but they can also include habitat enhancement and things like that. Prior to 2016, this program was funded by capital project appropriations, but since 2016, it has been funded by a surcharge placed on several types of hunting licenses that are then matched by federal grant money. I'll note here that true subsistence hunters and senior hunters are exempt from paying this fee. So when the bill initially passed, the surcharge included a sunset date that is set to expire soon, and so the bill before you repeals that sunset date in an effort to keep this successful program going into the future. Every year, the surcharge brings in approximately $1 million in user funds, which are then used to leverage another $3 million from the Pittman-Robertson match grant in federal money. So in total, $4 million are brought in every year by this surcharge. Separate of the state. The passage of SB 22 ensures that intensive management program can be self-sustainable and user-funded into the future, so it can continue to protect our wildlife populations and promote food security across Alaska. Thank you once again for the opportunity to present SB 22, and we would appreciate the committee's support.
Thank you, Ms. Torkelson. Very well done. And before we get to questions, next I'd like to invite Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang to please, Commissioner, put yourself on the record and provide your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, and I'm the Commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. The Alaska legislature recognized the importance of wild game meat to Alaskans as a food source, and consistent with Article 8, Section 4 of the Alaska Constitution, passed the Intensive Management Law in 1994. This law requires ADF&G and the Alaska Board of Game to identify moose, caribou, and deer populations that are especially important food sources and to ensure that the populations remain large enough to provide food security for Alaskans through an adequate sustained harvest. Recognizing the potential for federal interference in state IM programs, the department funded its IM program under the IM law from a series of capital projects. However, as capital funds were expended and new funds were not allocated, hunters became concerned about the future of IM in Alaska. Because of the success of the state IM programs in increasing ungulate, principally caribou and moose, populations on state land, hunters requested an intensive management surcharge to be added to their licenses. And I emphasize, hunters requested this. This request was made to ensure that funds were dedicated and available to assess and conduct intensive management activities, especially given the reluctance of federal managers to conduct intensive management on their lands or using federal funds to conduct intensive management. The legislature agreed and added an intensive management surcharge to hunting licenses in 2016. And this surcharge has been collected since January 1, 2017, and has been used to fulfill our obligations under the state's IM law. Intensive management programs that enhance habitat or manage predators are a core element of game management on state lands. I emphasize that IM programs also include habitat enhancement in addition to predator control. We have done several habitat enhancement projects across Alaska aimed at improving ungulate numbers. In addition to reliable funding, careful planning is essential to ensuring our state IM programs are both effective and defendable. All state IM programs are guided by an intensive management protocol that ensures decisions are based on the best available science. Intensive management allows us to put food on the table of Alaskans, one of my priorities as commissioners, and are essential to meeting subsistence needs, the department's first priority. Just look at the success we have had in meeting the food needs of Alaskans in the 40-mile caribou herd. This herd, restored through our IM efforts, put over $2.6 million of healthy meat in the freezers of Alaskans. I refer to a handout each of you should have as part of your package. These surcharge funds also ensure that we can implement the state IM law without interference of federal oversight. And I remind you that two-thirds of Alaskan lands are federal and are off limits to IM activities as they are managed for their natural diversity, not human use, despite a rural subsistence priority. And there is no assurance one can feed one's family under a natural diversity objective. The legislation before you today repeals the sunset on intensive management surcharge. This proposal does not have any additional cost to the department. Should the surcharge sunset, however, the department will see a significant decrease in our revenue to pay for intensive management and our ability to meet our obligations under the IM law. Revenue from the IM surcharge totaled approximately $1 million in each of the last three calendar years. Most of those funds are used to match Pittman-Robertson dollars at a 1-to-3 ratio to conduct and defend the science that we use to implement intensive management. That means absent an appropriation for the match, the department could stand to lose nearly $4 million, hampering our ability to conduct IM activities. With that, I urge your support for this important piece of legislation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have and have other staff that I can call on as a lifeline if I don't have the answer. With that, I'm open to questions, and thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang. Very much appreciate your comments. Does the committee have questions? Yes, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question you can direct for answer wherever you'd like, Mr. Chairman. The first question I had, I noticed in a lot of the department's materials there's a lot of references to research done by the Subsistence Division. Does any portion of this surcharge help to fund the activities of the Subsistence Division on which some of these materials rely?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we have not funded the actual collection of subsistence information using the surcharge. But instead, we focused on actually providing animals to meet the subsistence needs. And the reason is that we're collecting that information irrespective of whether we have an intensive management law or not on the books. And those activities are currently funded through other funding sources. So once we have ANSs described for each one of our hunts across Alaska, we then look at whether or not we're meeting those. And in cases where we're not and it's defined as a problem with the intensive management law, then we basically deal with it through these funds that are collected in order to provide food on the landscape for those subsistence hunters.
Thank you.
Yes, follow up.
Actually, another tack, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, yes.
Thank you. Commissioner, you, in your presentation, highlighted one program where you considered the intensive management a success. I think the Alaska Peninsula caribou might be another one. The intensive management system's been going on for a while. Could you highlight for the committee maybe some of the lessons that the department has learned from less successful intensive management programs and how you are avoiding those problems in the current programs that you've got going on?
Well, I think Senator, through the chair, I think one of the things I've learned, and I've been involved with this since the protocol development and the laws and passed, is that you can't underestimate the necessity for local support in these programs. Too often, the requirement to go out and do the intensive management program relies solely on the department. And if for these programs to be successful, it has to have community engagement. In the most successful programs we have had those community-level engagements. So I guess one of the lessons I learned is that as you move forward with this and you identify that you have a program that has scientific merit and can be defended, that you have to take a step and ensure that not only the department's engaged and involved, but we have local support in those programs.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner. I see that the habitat enhancement is a fairly small bit of the overall spending from on this program. Seems to me that it's really important. Can you tell me what your plans are there and what has that money been used for in habitat enhancement and what would be the future plans for that money?
Senator, through the chair, when we first passed the intensive management law, we were focusing on predation control. But, there are three elements there are two elements that are equally critical towards improving the number of ungulates on the landscape. And the second one is habitat. Habitat can degrade over time largely as a result of our desire to not let fires burn in the landscape. So one of the things we've been focusing on is trying to find areas where fire can occur and restore willows on the landscape. But of course, fire is a lot of something that a lot of people don't like. They don't like smoke, for instance, getting into villages. They don't like smoke around Fairbanks or Anchorage. And we certainly don't want cabins to burn down in our landscapes. So one of the things we did last year in the Kenai Peninsula is look to build fire breaks so that if a fire does break loose because of natural causes, we can actually control where that fire is and protect community health and hopefully restore some habitat that will allow moose and caribou to thrive. Now, clearly, the federal government is not excited about killing predators on their lands, but we have found ways to be able to deal with fire breaks and habitat manipulation through fire breaks with our federal partners. So I think that's an opportunity we can look at into the future. Clearly, also, we're looking at a couple different opportunities in the Alphabet Hills to have some fires up there to improve habitat. And I think as we move forward in time, we're going to have to look at some way to cooperate in the Mulchatna caribou herd. And that may also involve some habitat manipulation in that area because that herd is dismally down. And given the patchwork of ownership, of land ownership, it's pretty clear that we're not going to be able to solve that with just predator removal on the landscape. We'll probably also have to look at some habitat manipulation.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being on, Doug. Did have a question, if you know the history, I'm not sure if you do, prior to FY18 and some of the capital spending and some of the general fund spending that was utilized during that time, did it roughly equal the same amount of money, about $1 million?
I'm trying to think, Senator, through the chair. I'm trying to recall. That was about 8 years ago, and I think one of the capital projects we had was about $4 million that we could spend over about 4 years. So I think it was about $1 million a year, yes.
Thank you. And through the chair, just so when this was first started in 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, Was the idea to capture the existing federal Pittman-Robertson funds? And then just a follow-up to that question is do we anticipate the same level of support for Pittman-Robertson funds coming from the federal government in the future? And are we leaving dollars on the table by not supporting maybe a higher surcharge to sort of capture those funds if it's not in the capital budget or the current operating budget?
Yeah, Senator, through the chair, I was involved in the effort as a private citizen to get the surcharge in place. And I think there were two rationales that the private sector was looking at. One was there's a lot of science that has to go into making sure the predator control programs are effective and defendable. And when we're conducting the science, we can use Pittman-Robertson funds to match these surcharge funds to conduct that science, to do the assessments of the programs, a variety of other things. But we also didn't want to be in a position where the actual removals of the predators on the landscape was tied to federal funding. So there was a desire, at least from the public's point of view, to have a pot of money that the state could use that was not open to or subject to actual predator removal and federal thoughts on that process. So I guess we wanted to have enough money to basically do the actual removals of the predators on the landscape using state dollars, license dollars, and to have enough money to be able to conduct the science and match that with the PR funds. And I think we've done a pretty good job over time on that match.
Just one more.
Sure, please.
Thank you. And just one more. I remember when, before Barack Obama became president and during those first couple of years, there was a rush to buy firearms and ammunition. And I'm just wondering if you anticipate sort of another rush for purchasing firearms and ammunition, which would increase the size of the Pittman-Robertson Fund at the federal level, and then also for the states.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator, I went into Cabela's the other day to go buy some 30-06 shells, and I couldn't find them. So I think you're starting to see that rush to buy ammo and guns happen. So I suspect that the PR funds will increase again. They started decreasing after that initial surge, as you said, during the Obama bump. But I suspect you'll start seeing that, especially as talks of potential gun regulation increases.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can assure the commissioner it's been on since October at least. I'm about out of three different powders. Commissioner, since this is a bill to eliminate a sunset date, can you talk with us a little bit about how the department evaluates how long these programs need to run? I looked around the website, and there are quite a few that were on and have ended. There are several that have gone inactive. There are a few that have been active for a very long time indeed. Can you run us through the department's decision-making process for that?
Senator, through the chair, there isn't in regulation, the board has adopted IM targets across the state for the various caribou, moose, and deer populations. So when we're not meeting those targets, we have an obligation under the statute to report back to the Board of Game about why we think we're not meeting those targets. And we conduct an assessment as to whether or not we believe it's habitat limited, predator limited, or some other factor that's limiting our ability to meet those targets that the board has established. If in fact it's predator limited or habitat limited, we come back with a plan to them to address what we think is necessary or could be done on the landscape to again get those populations up to those numbers and our harvest objectives up to the numbers that they've specified. And then we have an obligation every year to report back to the board as to how well we're, if they adopt our intensive management plan, how well we're doing towards that. So in some cases, for instance, Mulchatna caribou, we have an IM plan in place. We were conducting intensive management on the landscape for wolves, but in some respects we're unsuccessful at some of those programs simply because the amount of state land and versus the amount of federal land we're not making a difference alone with that. So, again, we're going to go back and reevaluate whether habitat improvement could be a mechanism to do that, where we could start touching some of those federal lands. So programs turn on and off, basically keyed on first as to whether or not we're meeting the population objectives and the harvest objectives, but secondarily on whether or not we as a department can actually, you know, fulfill our management plan that we have, our intensive management plan that we have in place for those populations. And if we can't, we turn them off, because if we're not making a difference, why would we spend money on it?
So follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
So I guess the follow-up question, Commissioner, is if things are just go great, you know, the ratio of fires to habitat and the natural cycles are such that the department's management targets are hit in the vast majority or all of the areas of the state, can, if this bill passes, can you ever switch off? Do you have the ability to switch off this fee? What happens to the money?
Through the chair, Senator, I guess I don't see it going away, simply because the intensive management statute is there. And so if the legislature were to repeal the intensive management statute and foundation for it, then I agree there probably would be very little need for us to have the intensive management surcharge. But right now, with the intensive management law on the books, it's kind of an unfunded mandate to the department to fulfill our obligations under that statute. So to me, this surcharge helps us fulfill our mandate under that law. And again, if the law disappears because of legislative action, then I think we're in a different position.
Please, if I may. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, walk me through that a little bit. You don't have in that, you know, rosy scenario I painted there, you don't have, obviously, predator removal costs. And you don't have habitat manipulation costs, then we're talking about, if memory serves, 8-9% of the wildlife conservation's fund source, right? So, what is your intensive management requirement for that money at that point?
Well, Senator, through the chair, I guess I'm not seeing that rosy picture in the next decade. What I see sitting in the chair I'm sitting at is a growing population. I know we've stabilized a little bit in the state of Alaska, but I see a growing population. I see an increased desire by our federal partners to not manage for need on the landscape, rather manage for natural diversity. So I see an increased demand on state land for ungulates. And I don't believe that we're going to be able to meet that demand without some type of active management program over the next decade and a half. So I guess I see the necessity of having this tool in the toolbox. And if we have the tool in the toolbox, if we don't have the money to fund it, it's kind of like a useless tool in the toolbox. So to me, again, I see the need for this type of program. I watch it carefully. I think we have the safeguards in place to ensure that it's employed in a scientific manner and in a discretionary manner. But from what I've seen over my two decade and a half now of being involved in wildlife, it does work. And again, it's something I support doing in order to put food on Alaskan stables and meet our subsistence needs in rural Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, hello. Whoops. Hello, Commissioner. Just you talked earlier about the increased willingness for the refuge folks and the managers of federal land to work towards some solutions, particularly in the wild land that's more adjacent to populated areas like on the Kenai. When you talk about growing demand potentially, and I don't think that's something that's going to happen overnight, but if that does in fact occur, have they been active enough in plans for controlled burns and things like that, not only to reduce the threat to our communities, but in creating more habitat? And I'll just ask that because I've been in those conversations, and things that were not only a no but a hell no a few years back have become things that seem possible today. What is your take on those developments?
Well, Senator, through the chair, I'm more optimistic than I was in the past. I think the fact that they had some fires burning on the Kenai Peninsula, and they got out of control. They recognize now the need to have some fire breaks. They also, when you deal with natural diversity mandates like they have, that means you're going to let nature run its course, which you're going to have fires. So if you're going to have fires, I think they've realized the necessity of having some controls around those fires. So I'm optimistic that we're moving towards a commonality in management regimes. And at the end of the day, hopefully that commonality will result in increased moose numbers on the peninsula that will, again, go into people's freezers. And again, getting back to the thing on demand, you know, I was amazed at the desires of Alaskans to put meat in their freezers with what happened at the 40-mile hunt this year. Now, granted, some of the behaviors associated with that 40-mile hunt weren't exactly ideal, and we're working to have a better management program around those, but there is clearly a pent-up demand for Alaskans to put food in their freezers.
Thank you. All right, one more quick one, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So just for the public, so they're aware, I wouldn't have supported removing a termination date in 2016. I wouldn't have supported that bill without our ability to experiment with what the program, the functionality of the program, and how successful it could be. But with 4 years, I'm very comfortable moving this bill forward at this point, Mr. Chairman. I back in 16, I remember being a bit concerned without any time you're providing that level of funding for a department and you're not sure what the outcome is going to look like. I was a little bit concerned. I'm no longer concerned. I think it's a positive program, needs to go forward.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. And I brought this bill forward for many of those reasons, as well as, you know, now's not the time to leave federal dollars on the table, and clearly it's definitely filling a gap here in the state. And so I appreciate all the questions and comments. Is there any more questions? All right. With that, thank you very much again, Ms. Torkelson. Excellent job. Commissioner Vincent Lang, thank you for being present. Mr. Grasser, who please stick around just in case we have more questions, but we're going to move on to some public testimony. So public testimony is now open, and it looks like we have a handful of folks online. If you could, I'd just remind you, please, when you put yourself on the record, give us your name, the organization that you're with, and whether you're for or against this bill. And we'll just choose you in order of the time. Mr. Somerville, if you can hear us, we cannot hear you. So you may be on mute. Okay, we will move on to Mr. John Sturgeon. Sir, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello? Hello?
Yes. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Hello, I'm waiting to testify. I think we might have got cut off.
Okay, yes, is that Mr. Sturgeon?
Who are you asking to testify?
I think we have a couple people on here. Is that Mr. Somerville? Mr. Somerville, if you are there, please begin, and if not, we'll move to Mr. Sturgeon.
Hello?
Hello, is this Mr.
Somerville? Is the person waiting to testify?
This is Ron Somerville. I'm waiting to testify.
Yes, please go ahead, Mr. Somerville, and please, if you could keep it to 2 minutes or less, we'd appreciate it. All right, what do we got going on over there? We're going to take a brief at ease. All right, we're back on the record. Mr. Somerville, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
There we go. Yes, sir. Please please put yourself on the record, begin your testimony, and please keep it to under 2 minutes if you'd be so kind.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Somerville. I'm 8126 Keegan Street here in Juneau. I'm representing the Territorial Sportsman. I've asked our Senator Jesse Keel to give you a copy of our comments on SB 150 last year, which mirrors the same bill that you're considering today. We didn't have time to redo that with current membership in the Senate. Anyway, we do support SB 22 for a variety of reasons. One is, as illustrated by the commissioner, we need the funds if we're going to keep meeting the responsibilities as dictated in the intensive management law. I would like to add one thing to what the commissioner said, and I just briefly, my background is 24 years of fish and game. I was a deputy commissioner as well as the director of wildlife, and I was on the board of game for 6 years when we started the new intensive management program that's in effect today. And we stress the need for funds continually through the process to determine, one, if predator control or predator management is necessary, and to look at other alternatives, determining whether or not they're successful and things like that. Also, as the question was posed as to, if everything's okay, do we need the money or what happens? Funds are needed constantly to monitor populations because they change constantly. Weather conditions causes extreme drops in deer population and moose populations in particular, and money is needed to continually monitor those and provide some sort of recovery process and plan if that goes into effect. Anyway, I didn't have much else to add. I just want to say that we really support it and hope that the committee will send this legislation on and pass it so we can keep up with this program.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Somerville. We really appreciate it. Next, we'll go to Mr. John Sturgeon. John, if you can hear us, please put yourself on the record and begin.
Good afternoon, Senator Revac and other committee members. My name, again, is John Sturgeon. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 22. My name is John Sturgeon, and today I'm representing the 550 members of Safari Club International, the Alaska chapter. In addition to the testimony I'm about to present today, we have also submitted some written comments, which I hope you received by now. Safari Club International Alaska supports the repeal of the Intensive Management Sunset Clause, SB 22. Wild food sources such as moose and caribou are extremely important food sources for Alaskans. In rural Alaska, this amounts to about 40% for the rural residents. It's also becoming a very important food source of protein to urban Alaskans with a trend towards a more organic and healthier foods. You can't beat the wild game for being healthy and organic, of course. The intensive management program has proven to be a very good way to increase game numbers that can be used as food sources for both urban and rural Alaskans. In addition, with the fiscal shortfalls facing Alaskans, whenever possible, user groups should pay their own way. The funds generated from hunting license surcharges does just exactly that. It's a small price to pay proper management of Alaska's wildlife. Again, representing Safari Club International, Alaska chapter, and we support Senate Bill 22. And thank you for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chairman and other committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Sturgeon. We really appreciate your testimony today. Next, we'll move on to Mr. Sam Rohrer. Sam, if you can hear me, please put yourself on the record. Tell us who you're with and give us your 2-minute testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Rivak and committee members. My name is Sam Rohr. I'm calling in from Kodiak, and I'm the president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, or APHA, and I'm going to be testifying today in support of SB 22. SB 22 would remove the sunset provision for the intensive management surcharge that is charged to resident and non-resident hunting license purchasers. Intensive management, or IM, is a critical management tool for putting food on the table of Alaskans. IM is designed to prevent ungulate populations from declining to a level where they exist at such a low equilibrium with predator populations that they cannot provide a harvestable surplus. We believe that wildlife managers need these need the tools that IM provides to monitor and potentially adjust the ratios of predator to prey. Without these tools, human needs, most critically subsistence needs, will not be met. IM programs require extensive and exhaustive population assessments as well as analysis of the factors leading up to the severe ungulate population declines, and these efforts cost money, as we know. APHA was part of the coalition that in 2015 rallied behind Representative Tallarico's legislation that raised hunting licenses and tag fees. That legislation, in addition to doubling non-resident fees, created a revenue stream to be used to fund IM. This IM surcharge started out as an experiment, but now it has become a critical revenue stream to support healthy and productive ungulate populations statewide. APHA supports the current IM surcharge of $10 for residents and $30 for non-residents, and we ask that you support the removal of the sunset that is offered in SB 22. We ask that you move the bill out of your committee. Thanks for listening to my testimony, and I'm certainly available if you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Mr. Rohr. We appreciate your testimony. Next, we will move on to Mr. Mark Richards. Mark, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin your two-minute testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Rivak and members of the committee. My name is Mark Richards. I'm the Executive Director of Resident Hunters of Alaska, and I'll be testifying in support of SB 22 for nearly 3,000 members today. I think Commissioner Vincent Lang really hit the nail on the head for some that are concerned about this surcharge fee. As long as the IM statute is still a law, the Board of Game is required to implement IM programs under certain conditions. We understand that some may not agree with predator control programs overall, but they are designed to help put food on the tables of Alaskans, and we certainly support that. Something that came up at our advisory committee meeting last week, for those who might be concerned about not having a termination date, just something to think of is that the legislature has given the Board of Game authority to exempt such things such as brown bear tag fees to residents. So if it comes up later on, it might be something you consider to give the board authority to exempt this surcharge if it's no longer needed. I think Senator Keel made a good point as well, and I will just say that we can't the Pittman Robertson funds, we need to use those when we can. And certainly I can't buy any ammo for my pistols right now. It's looking like gun sales are going to hit the roof and we're going to have a lot of PR funds available. And this is just a prime way to utilize those. Thank you very much, Senator Rivak, for introducing this.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. We very much appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll move on to Mr. Rod Arno. Sir, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, Senator Rivak, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify for the Alaska Outdoor Council and our 10,000 members who are in support of the SB 22 and ready to work this through so that there's no lapse in the funding that comes in from this. Just simple enough, the Outdoor Council was there in the 90s when food security wasn't a buzzword, but we were working on the intensive management statute that this bill is trying to make sure that the people who benefit to help putting into it. And I want to first thank Senator Michiki there for the safeguard, because that was a concern to the Outdoor Council when it came up, and we go, okay, listen, I know we can prove that this will work, this surcharge on here. It's got the support of the people that are paying that money, and it's proven out. So thank you, Senator Michiki, for that safeguard, because now I can get up for the Outdoor Council and its 10,000 members and say that it's working. You know, a good thing to think about, as Senator Michiki said also, was taking care of rural subsistence needs. Well, when you look at the low-income license that are sold across the state, they're increasing. In 2019, there were 16,673 of those low-income, and in 2020, that went up, about 1,300 on that. And then you look, you know, in rural Alaska, there's about 4,000 of those low-income licenses. But you look in urban Alaska also, and you'll see that there's about 13 to 14,000 of those low-income folks that are buying a license. And they don't have to purchase, or when they're, they don't have to pay for the surcharge, but they benefit from it, because these are the folks that live in urban areas but choose to hunt, and they can only hunt on areas that are in close into town, road connected, and that's where the conflicts are, and that's where we need to have enough harvestable surplus to take care of all Alaskans equally. So again, thanks to the whole committee, you're knowledgeable about what the intensive management statute was supposed to be, and your questions will help hold the department's feet to the fire, because I've been paying attention and taking notes also. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Arno, for your testimony. We really appreciate it. Is there anybody that I've missed on the telephone line or the internet waiting to testify? Seeing none, Mr. Grasser, is there anything you'd like to add? We'll take that as a no. Thank you. Thank you again all for being here. Thank you. I've noticed several names here of organizations that have been very instrumental to the state of Alaska through all your hard work in your different organizations. Thank you for all that you do, and thanks for being here to testify. We'll close public testimony. Okay, having had public testimony, questions answered, last year this bill in its current form made it through the Senate unanimous. With all that being said, what's the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 22, version 32-LS0208/A out of committee with the accompanying fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Is there an objection? Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 22, version 32-LS0208 dash A moves from the committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. All right, we're back on the record. I would like to thank everybody again today. That's all the business we have for the committee today. Thank you to everyone who testified, and thanks to everybody who put time and effort into this bill. As a reminder, our next meeting will be held on Wednesday, the 17th at 3:30 p.m., and we will be hearing from several of the governor's appointees related to DNR. So thank you very much. This meeting is now adjourned at 4:17 p.m.